East Rutherford Landing, starring Robert Sala, will not be heard at this time, so that the following replacement may be cleared for takeoff.
That did sound like an airplane light going off, didn't it?
It did, but usually we have this sort of fun opening, but our thoughts and prayers with the people in Florida right now dealing with the hurricane in Tampa and Sarasota, Hurricane Milton, and all that stuff. We have a lot of people down in Florida, including one of our friends, James Steinen, and a bunch of others.
Yeah, and a whole lot of my family. My aunts, Argelia, my cousins, Michelle, Teddy, Nolito, Ale Jr., and my tío Ale, my tía Thelma. A lot of our family and friends are down there right now, and they are getting the worst of it. And our thoughts and prayers go out to them. We hope that the next hour or so will take the edge off. Because we're all about the fun times on this show.
Yeah, so we have a lot of news, and we will cover all of that. So, if you would, Chico.
Actually, since you usually start the show, but you didn't, but we haven't heard from you, so, Gordon?
From somewhere in America, this episode of WLTI is on. Let's go.
Whee! Welcome to episode 463 of the World's Strongest Game Show podcast here at 5-1. My name is Jason Block, your strength and conditioning coach, all-around good guy. And I am here with Chico Alexander and Gordon Pepper. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing good. Hope you are.
I am. And we are starting off with two very anticipated game reviews, both on the CW. As they debuted about a week ago, they are the new versions of Scrabble, hosted by Raymond Simone, and LeVar Burton's Trivial Pursuit. So, which one do we want to start with first?
Let's go with the 8 o'clock slot first. It's Scrabble, and it's not like any of the Scrabble versions that you've seen on television. At least it's not like the one that aired in the 80s and 90s, and it's certainly not like Scrabble Showdown, which was just a bad use of IP all around. This is a little closer to actual Scrabble play, in that you are playing with racks of tiles, and you have to make words out of tiles in three different rounds. The first round, you're given a scrambled word in a single rack and one word clues. Playing off of the letters on the board, you have to unscramble the racks.
It's sort of like the Chuck Woolery version, but without the funny.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Scrabble Password.
Right. And after I watched this first round, I was like, oh God, what are they doing here? But continue.
And in round three, it gets a little more cerebral because you are given racks with seven letters. You're given racks with seven letters, and you have to basically play them as you are playing a game of Scrabble. In that you have to... This is one of those things where not only do you have to play laterally, but you also have to play strategically. You have to use the letters to create words and get the official Scrabble score for those words, including letter and word bonuses.
And the player with the most points goes on to the $10,000 bonus round.
Have seven racks to make seven words, and if you get 100 points, it's worth $1,000. 150 points is worth $5,000, and 200 points is $10,000. And every word you make will give you the official Scrabble score, including letter and word bonuses.
So the good.
Yes.
Jay, I'll let Jay start with the good, because I agree with a lot of what Jay's going to say.
Okay. The good here is that I absolutely adore the Scrabble rounds where you're actually playing Scrabble. It's cerebral, it's strategic, and I love that. The first rounds with the jumble words, with that stuff, I did not like so much. But the gameplay from the second half of the game on, very good stuff for me.
Okay, I really like the bonus round.
Yes.
I really like it because it's part of me almost didn't want to like it, but I'm also thinking you have to control the letters, you have to control the play and how the contestants can get to the money and the bonuses. So I like that. And like Jay, I really like the second round, but I also understand why the whole game can't be like this, because in the first half hour, it was a blowout in terms of that, where there was no mystery in terms of who's going to win.
Right.
And that's part of the problem that I have with this round, is that there is no golden snitch. I'm not sure that there should be a golden snitch, but it does. If you have somebody that's clearly outclassing everybody else, it's going to be a boring second round.
Yeah, that was, I agree with Jay and I agree with you. The good part is the set itself is beautiful. The gameplay itself, especially in the third and fourth rounds, is absolutely amazing. It gets you thinking, it gets your mind active. Raven Simone is actually really good at keeping the action moving, and
I don't like her as much as you do. I'm gonna say she's competent.
Yeah,
not great.
But I guess the main hang-up I have is that you have to get through the boring stuff in order to get to the exciting stuff. It's almost like
here's what would have been. I'm sorry, Chico, go, and then I'll tell you what I thought the better play would be. I thought you were done.
It's almost like you're watching two of your best friends play Scrabble, and they have a very rudimentary, fundamental knowledge of the game.
Here's what would have been the better play for me in that first round. And there's two options. Either A, you make the show an hour, and I understand why you want to make it into two half-hour segments. I get it. It's the end thing to do. But I would not have minded if you had the original classic Scrabble in the first round with two people playing against each other, and then the two winners go on to the Scrabble final round. That, I think, could have been fun. Or if you want to keep it at a half hour, you have three people play, you buzz in when you think you can answer it instead of it going back and forth. Because the biggest problem that I have going back and forth is that if both players, because the way that they have the points, if both players get everything right and go back and forth, somebody is still going to have a lead on somebody else. So it doesn't completely make it fair from a gameplay standpoint. So the better play would have been get three people, you sort of weed out the idiot, and the two people with the highest score after round one, then they go against each other head-to-head in round two.
Yeah, I love the way you put it.
Or again, you put the original four people in on the Scrabble board with the 500 and 1,000. That could have been a lot of fun. That easily could have been 20 minutes, and then you go from there.
Yeah,
and you do it that way instead of speed rounds.
Yeah.
Yes. But still, this is a very good effort and a very watchable show. Solid B for me.
It's a solid B for me, too. I enjoyed it.
I didn't like it as much as you guys. I thought the second round, I think, was great. I really loved it because, again, it's up to the contestants to figure out who wins. First round for me was very tripe.
Yeah, I
didn't
like
it at all. And the bonus round, I like what it was in play. I think the better play may have even been seven random letters, and it's not. You don't play the letters that's there. You make it random, and even sort of countdown-ish, where you know you're going to get two vowels and five consonants, or something to the effect. I thought that would have been a much funner play. So for me, C.
Wow. Because again, okay.
Everything offsets each other for me. You have good, you have bad. I like some of the stuff, but is there anything that I really wrote home about? No, there's in every aspect of the game, I found something good, and even the good stuff, I found holes.
Okay.
So maybe I'm just in a cranky mood. You know what? C plus. I'll be in a little bit less of a cranky mood.
That's fair. That's fair.
But for me, it's everything that's there. Everything that was good, I can find something bad in it. So for me, that averages that out to an average.
Okay. Right. Then the second show, which was, again, another double half hour, was the long-awaited revival of Trivial Pursuit with LeVar Burton. Okay? So here's how it works. We have three players and three rounds of questions within the six category realm, which is science and nature, entertainment, sports and leisure. I forget the other three
geography,
off the top.
It's geography, entertainment, history, art and literature, science and nature, and sports and leisure.
Right. So, correct.
Nico gets 100 points.
Yes. Now, if you get an answer correct, you collect a wedge on your own your own thing. Now, each wedge is worth 200 points. Each correct answer is worth 100 points. If you get all six, you max out. But the fact is that even if you get a wedge, you still get 100 points for correct answer. End of three rapid rounds, the top two scorers move on to going to the center. And in a back and forth round, you eliminate one category, and then you have 200, 400, 600, 800, 1,000 points. The highest score after that round goes on to the $20,000 bonus round, where they have 60 seconds to gather all six wedges, and if they miss a wedge, they can go back to it. There is a lot of good here. To me, I thought LeVar Burton was very competent. Although, Gordon, I did notice a lot of Howie Mandel-esque post-work, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly.
Yes, very, very deal or no deal-ish. Hey, this went 8 hours. We need to cut this to an hour. That was deal or no deal. I don't know how long the first episode of this was. The editing crew is there. I did not like LeVar Burton as much as you did. I will go into why when you are done.
Okay. No, I didn't say I liked him as much. I said he was, again, competent. I thought the gameplay was solid. There was a lot of questions there, which I liked. And again, it was simple. I liked this a lot. It was competent and solid for me.
Yeah. The thing
about
it.
I'm sorry, Chico. Go.
Yeah. Tripping. Yeah. The thing of it is, a lot of it plays to the source material. I mean, Trivial Pursuit, you're getting asked a whole lot of questions. And our good friend Doug Morris pointed this out. In round four, when you have the two players doing their head-to-head, by the way, you control your own destiny because you get rid of one category.
And set the categories the way you want it. Right. Exactly. I'm sorry to interrupt. I apologize, Chico, but yeah.
You don't set your own destiny, and I'll explain why momentarily, but Chico, keep going.
But and if you've ever played Trivial Pursuit, and the three of us have, the way you win the game is to get your completed token to the center of the board, which is what they're doing here. So it's those little sort of tips of the hats to the format that I appreciate. I also like, and this is just my Gen X brain talking, I like LeVar Burton was going like, but you don't have to take my word for it. You know, all that stuff that made him him. So I have no problem with LeVar Burton as host. I like him as a host. I think he's doing a really bang-up job. And, yeah. Gordon?
Oh, I'm going to be the villain here, aren't I?
Somebody's got to.
Okay. Apparently somebody's got to, and that's going to be me. Okay. So the good. There is good here. I'm going to sound like I'm going to mash this show. I am not. There is a lot of good here. And one of the things that I'm going to say, and I'll also say this, I didn't say this for Scrabble, so I'll go back and I will. There's a lot of questions. There is, it's one of the things that we always complain about with shows is that the pacing is slow. There's not enough material. There's a lot of filler. Not on these shows. This is good. There's a lot of material. There's a lot of questions. There's just enough filler that it's not too slow on that, especially on Trivial Pursuit. Scrabble does a really good job at that. The questions themselves, and we really talk about this on Scrabble, but the questions themselves are good in the first round. So I don't have a problem with that. The trivia in Trivial Pursuit is really good. It is solid. I love the level of difficulty that they have in the questions. It goes from easy to harder. The layers are good. I do like the fact that you can assign different points to the questions, however, and a big however here. You're not in control of your own destiny, because if you're trailing and your opponent gets everything right, you lose. In the first episode.
That's the golden snitch, sadly.
Well, there is a little bit of a golden snitch in there, but the golden snitch is based on your opponent getting questions wrong and not being in a perfect game situation. Is there a way that I would fix it? Yes, there is. When we get to the bad, we'll chat about it. But let's get back to the good. The bonus round is predictable, but there's nothing wrong there. Get 6 in 60 seconds. That's fine. This is a good example of not reinventing the wheel. It is a solid bonus round, and that's what you want. And the level of difficulty is there. The one thing maybe I would have liked is you have to answer those 6 questions in terms of that instead of passing and getting a different one, because I think it makes it a little bit easier. But you know what? The bonus round's good. The format, for the most part, is okay. There's things I don't like about it. We'll talk about that in terms of bad. I understand why you put in the bonus wedges. That's actually important. And the reason why is that if people get the same questions correct, if there's a tie, the bonus wedges will be the tiebreaker in terms of that. And also, if you max out, you do advance automatically in the second round, and that's what should happen. So all those little things are good. The structure of the game, for the most part, is good. However, and here's the bad, there's some real issues that I've got with some of the gameplay. It is fixable, but it needs to be fixed. I will let Jay and Chico go first before I go at it.
No, I actually want to... Chico, you don't mind, because...
No, I know. I want to hear what Gordon has to say here.
Okay. So let's address LeVar Burton. I agree with you on the Howie Mandel-esque. I think he will be good. I didn't like him this episode, and I'll explain why. He wasn't LeVar Burton. He was Alex Trebek-White. Especially in some of the other stuff where he was doing Alex Trebek-isms, especially when everybody got the question wrong. Even a little bit of Mayim Bialik, and I don't want Mayim Bialik in the form of Jordy LaFord. I want LeVar Burton. So I think he will come into his own and get it. So as I said, he was competent. I liked him better on this than a lot of hosts on that. But, you know, there's room here. I want LeVar to be LeVar. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, that second round, as much as I like it, there is no interplay. Meaning that if you get the questions right, great. If you get it wrong, you get it wrong. Obviously, in Trivial Pursuit, there's no interplay, but there needs to be a way that someone can trail and win the game without hoping that someone misses a question. And before you say, well, Gordon, that's weakest link. No. Weakest link, both people are on zero when they start. On this, someone has an advantage going in unless they tie, which is rare because of the format. So in order for you to win, you need the person in the lead to get something wrong, and you're not on even footing, which, again, in the first episode, turned into a boring blowout for that reason. I do like the point structure. And the easy fix is if someone gets it wrong and you get it right, you can jump into the lead. Or, you know, a play log, something, anything, even a jump in for that, because if the end is you want to get to the end, then technically it should be play that, yes, you get points, but the only way you win is if you get more chips than your opponent. Just my thoughts on it. I think the gameplay is solid. I think it's good, but there are tweaks that need to be made in order for this to be an elite game, and it's not. I'll give this the same C+ I gave Scrabble. A lot of really good stuff in there, but a bunch of big holes that need to be worked on.
A little bit better and say B-. Okay? They're both good, but I understand the fault there. I get it.
I'm gonna be that guy, aren't I?
Yeah.
I gave it a B+. I think it's a really good.
You would.
I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed playing along with it. I enjoyed LeVar Burton on it. And I enjoyed the gameplay. This is a show that, you know, if it weren't for the fact that it was on Thursday night and I'm busy watching football on my phone, I would make time.
Are you ready for some football?
No. That's the new one.
Yeah, right.
I will tell you something right now. The Thursday night football theme is a banger. Okay.
Yes. Sorry, I want Ed Kalehoff to get his royalties. Thank you very much. So.
Are you ready for some football?
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, yeah.
Right. Well, if Ed Kalehoff is listening, his address is peplet@gsnn.com.
Yeah. Ed knows my email address and my phone number. Trust me on that one, Chico. And Jay can verify that too, can't you, Jay?
Oh God, yes. Indeed. However,
I'll say this before I move on. I will say this, and I agree with Chico. Both shows have a lot of playability, and yes. Assuming that both seasons get renewed and they tweak some of these things, both shows have potential to be an A show. They do, but it's again part of my job is to pick. But both shows are solid. Would I watch them again? Yeah. If there's no football on after Thursday Night Football, am I probably watching the CW shows? Yeah. It's they're addicting shows. They're decent. They just got to work on the things that don't work. But no, neither show is terrible. Neither show sucks. And they both have a lot of really good stuff on there, so that if you're a game show fan, you have a lot worse things to do than watch these shows. I would even though I gave them both C+, I would recommend them. They're slightly above average. I would recommend everybody to see them. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we go from the shiny floor to the sandy beach.
Oh, we're going there. Okay.
Well, you have the program in front of you. Where are we going?
Oh, that's right. I thought we were going to... You're right. We're going to the sandy beach, and you're going to help us out. Because... Hit it.
If you are looking for an advantage, and you happen to find an advantage, and you want to keep your advantage secret, don't do what Seuss May did. She came back to Tribal literally red-handed.
What happened?
I'm bringing that up because she was a freaking Muppet.
Okay. So Sue was out looking for a challenge or looking for an advantage. She had to hide red paint splattered evidence of her search for an advantage.
Why? Because was the advantage trapped?
It was in a little compartment and it had like a red paint all it. She had to hide red paint splattered evidence, and hence the title of the episode. Is that blood in your hair?
Okay.
But yeah, she found a hidden immunity idol at all, but guaranteed her safety in the game. And yeah, so from there we go to, I believe we go to a reward challenge. Actually, more on the paint here. Paint. Sue thought she had covered all the paint, but when Tiana and Caroline saw that, they noticed blood on her hands and her face and her hair. They started getting concerned that she hurt herself.
And she's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Well.
Kiana knows, like, something's up. Something's up. Meanwhile, speaking of challenges, Sierra finds a random shot in the dark on the ground and asks everybody to check their bags because everybody else had theirs. It was assumed to be Andy's, and so the Alliance of Women decided to just throw it back in the sand. Okay, so there's that. And now we go to a challenge where the three tribes have to roll a heavy metal cube, we've seen this before, down a path to a beanbag toss through a stacked frame, and then finish the race with a puzzle. First to finish earned immunity and a reward of 3 egg-laying hens that will probably be eaten by the end of the week. The second tribe to finish also earned immunity and 6 eggs.
All
the losing tribe earns is a date with Jeff in his hut.
Go on.
So, Labo. Gata was able to complete the puzzle before Lotto had a piece on the board. Tuku was the one that finished it second, so Lotto is going to Tribal Council.
You could say, Chico, that they laid an egg.
Sigh. Now, Jeff...
I'll go to my room and think about what I just did.
No, that's fine.
Okay,
that's fine. The yolk's on all of us. Let's move on.
That was an excellent pun, Jay.
Okay, so Jeff made a point to say that Rome and Genevieve made absolutely no effort to switch gears or switch out the other players in order to get the puzzle together. It's a puzzle that ended the same way it started. Just Jeff throwing gasoline on a fire again. So Rome admitted it was his mistake, and now he has to go and find a piece of something to ensure that he doesn't end up paying for it in tribal. But before we do that, Caroline, TD, and Andy, they go on their little trip. Y'all know that trip.
Oh, the journey.
Yep. So for their opportunity to earn an advantage, their note says, if one of them agrees to lose their vote at the next tribal council, they'll share an advantage. But a failure to agree on that one person means they'd all lose their vote and no one would get an advantage. Andy does not want to lose his vote. Was going to tribal next. She didn't want to lose her vote. So TD agrees to lose her vote. And the three of them earned an amulet idol. The caveat of this idol, it is inactive until they're together living on the same beach and all active parts must be played together to work.
So, wait a minute. They have to survive the merge.
Right.
And be together to be an immunity idol? So those three have to work together?
Those three have to work together. It could be used as 3, 2, or 1, depending on which players with the amulet parts are still in the game when it comes to the merge. So there's that. Now we go to tribal. Rome declares about trusting who he trusts, and that prompts Genevieve to giggle with a spooky, scary comment. She explains that it was starting to feel like something's happening and that the decision has to be right because if it's wrong, it's over for Genevieve. Rome plays a steal a vote and takes away Kashan's vote. And Kashan ends up going home almost in a unanimous decision, thanks to that steal a vote.
Interesting. I'm not sure about this episode, really.
Yeah, I like the little Power of Three sort of amulet idol that was played on the journey. I think it's nice and creative, nice little touch there. It's something new. But all in all, I have to wonder, this must be like bizarro fall, because we have smart Big Brother players and dumb Survivor players.
Well, I actually thought this episode was less of what's going on now and more of, well, we're seeding the storylines for later.
Yeah, I know that. We know that. Yep. They Survivor has done that before.
Yeah, sort of a check.
They have. And I like the twist, because now, you know, one of the fun things about Survivor always is just when you think you've got your alliance set, now all of a sudden, you now got to rethink, because now all of a sudden you may need to be in alliance with somebody that you don't necessarily want to be in alliance with if you want the immunity or if you want the power. So right. I like the wrinkles that they're throwing in. I really did like this episode.
It was a good episode. And like you said, it's almost like Chekhov's tiki torch, almost. They're sowing the seeds for later story development down the line.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But as speaking of storyline, the story is about to end in the Radford house.
Previously on Big Brother.
When we last left, we had not found out what the veto competition was. So the veto competition was BB Comics. We had Mackenzie, Rubina, Cam, Chemo, and Chelsea all playing. And it got, I mean, this was the worst ever, because Mackenzie was the only one who actually finished the competition. Everyone timed out. So Mackenzie wins veto, and for the first time this season, she keeps the nominations the same, which I believe was Chemo and Rubina, I believe.
You are correct, sir.
And Chemo goes out and becomes the next person on the WLTI. Losers Lounge Couch. Whee!
Yes, it's the WLTI Losers Lounge Couch. We have comfortable seating, remote control freedom, Sydney sweet, soft ass cushion, cup holder, your very own cubby hole, and an e-reader preloaded with a copy of Hawaii, What Not to Do, as well as the Club Gordon Banger of the Week. Gordon?
It's called Don't Give This Up Like I Did by DJ Chemo. And there is someone named DJ Chemo with that actual real song, which is ironic because he gave it up.
You want snacks? You want snacks? We got snacks. We have Goobers, Raisin Ads, pretzels, Oreos, Freeze, Chewy Freeze, Hot Cheetos and Takis, Chilled Reese's Cups, Cheese, Pizza Pringles, Fruit Bites, Funyuns, Fun Dip, Garrett Chicago style popcorn. If you're thirsty, we have the drinks that'll cure your little loser thirst. We have Coke, Diet Coke, Coke Zero, Sprite, Snapple, Usher Spray, Root Red, Dr. Pepper, Simply Orange, Simply Cranberry, Tang, Red Kool-Aid, Sunny D, Purple Stuff, Purple Drink,
A&W Root Beer.
And the number one stack combination is WLTI Losers Lounge Couch, Krispy Kreme, Classic Glazed Donuts, and Izzy Soft Drink. And the number one rule of the WLTI Losers Lounge Couch, you can sleep on it. You can hog the cushions, but you do not hog Krispy Kreme and Izzy Soda. Y'all don't come back now. You hear? So that leaves us with the final four as we kick off the end game on Big Brother.
Tavares, right in the butt.
What?
No. Well, and again, as we all know, the head of household in this competition, thank you, Gordon, means absolutely Nothing.
Nothing. Zero.
Okay. It's all about the power.
The only thing that it means is that you're making it to the final three.
Right, and the person who, talk about the head of household, please.
It's for this HOH competition. The three eligible players competed in Hid Agenda, a multiple choice quiz to find hidden phrases in source code depictions.
I love this challenge, by the way. I thought it was great.
Yeah, the first to three, as a first to three who wins the HOH, and it goes down to the wire, and the winner is Chelsea.
Yay!
But as you said before, that means absolutely nothing. So
right.
That only means you are through to finale night.
Correct. So she's part of the finale.
But there is one more thing, and that'll play out in the next episode.
Okay, but I just have a second. I know what happens, but the question is, do we say what happens?
Well, before we make that determination, by the way, the answer is no. We have to talk about the nomination ceremony, and Chelsea reveals her decision to put Cam and Mackenzie on the block. So that means Cam and Mackenzie are in danger, and Rubina is
it does not matter.
It all depends on
the veto.
Yes.
Yeah, because whoever wins veto, that will be the person that's off the block, and that will be the person that makes a vote. The only time that it does matter is if Chelsea wins again, and then she's got a decision to make.
So the veto competition, which did air, is called Passcode Protectors. It is a race to get the most questions correct about when certain events happened in the game.
Ah, the old date competition.
Yep. Once three players are eliminated, the remaining player becomes the winner of the veto. Mackenzie is slowest in the first question and earned a strike. Chelsea was slowest in the second and third questions and earned two strikes. Vito was slowest in the fourth, earned her first strike. Mackenzie was slowest in the fifth, earned her second strike. Rubina got her second strike, so everybody's got two strikes. Except for Cam, who gets his first strike on the seventh question. And the eighth question is when Rubina was knocked out with her third strike. So now Chelsea wants to throw the competition so that either Cam or Mackenzie would get the blood on their hands with the use of the veto. So, a final question to determine the winner. Be continued.
Oh, okay. Well, I know what happens. And we can't spoil it. Can we?
No.
Damn.
Well, we could. Sure, because it's on Joker's update, so absolutely we can spoil it.
Okay. Jay, what happened?
Mackenzie wins the veto. So you all know Mackenzie's going to take herself off, and then Rubina and Cam will be on the notification. So let's play it this way. Who is Mackenzie going to take to the finals with her?
Well, Mackenzie's going to take Chelsea with her to the finals if she can, which means that you need to eliminate the person that you feel has the best chance of upsetting those plans. And here's the thing, and here's the sticky wicket here in this situation, because Rubina has been winning stuff, but here, Cam, from a technical, physical standpoint, really should be blowing everybody up in terms of who's left. So is he sort of playing it safe and now is the time that you finally get to see what he does? Or is he just that physically immensely incompetent? Because I don't think he's that physically and mentally incompetent.
I don't think that, I think I think he's just, he and Rubina have both been floaters. I think this is Chelsea's and Mackenzie's to lose. And honestly, if I were Mackenzie, I'd take Rubina up there because I think Rubina's the easiest to beat, and it's going to be a Chelsea-Mackenzie final. That's my thought, okay?
I would agree with you on that, but let's look at this from a gameplay standpoint.
Okay.
I think if Cam gets to the end, thank you for your $75,000. You're losing to anybody that's there.
Correct.
And anybody meaning either Chelsea or Mackenzie, because obviously it will not be a Cam Rubina final. Keep in mind, Rubina has got some votes on that jury, so she's a little bit more dangerous to keep around. Because I can see Rubina winning the game. Now, the only way that I would see Cam winning the game is if this is a bloodfest in terms of the strategy and the way people are played. But the irony about this is that the people that made this a personal bloodfest aren't even in the jury, with the exception of maybe Angela, maybe Quinn. Maybe. But those are only two votes. Most of the game has been played as a solid game based on strategy, and it doesn't seem like these jurors would be swayed by emotion or emotional play or dirty play, because there really hasn't been any. This has been a really solid, positive version of Big Brother in terms of the gameplay. Gameplay has been good this year.
It's been really good. And honestly, I don't think we've gotten a woman final three, have we?
I don't believe we have. No, this will be a first.
I don't think we have. No.
We've had women. We've had a double female final two.
We have. Yes. A number of times. Earliest one, Big Brother 3.
Yes. So, but the thing is, to me, Cam has to go. To me. And Cam is the guy that needs to go.
And it, okay. And all points to Cam going. So.
So,
I'm not sure that that's the right strategy, because again, the question becomes, and then I know we got to move on, but the question becomes, is this a who do I think we can beat in the final two, or is this a who do I think I can block out from getting to the final two?
Yeah.
Because if I'm Mackenzie or Chelsea, I'm looking at Cam. And Cam is, if I'm there with Cam, I win. And I think that has got to be in their mind.
Well,
because again, this game has been played pretty clean.
It really
so has. I think it's going to come to who they can convince on best gameplay, better gameplay. And if it goes there, Cam's got nothing.
And the thing of it is, it all goes to the jury in the end. And you ask the question. Is this going to be personal, or is this the vote of a righteous player? I don't think we're gonna get any personal votes this time.
No, I agree with you. I don't think it will be. I think it's gonna be on gameplay.
It is gonna be on gameplay. But I really believe if it's going to be on gameplay, Mackenzie should win this. Okay,
agreed.
I don't think Chelsea has played as good a game as you think. I think Mackenzie has played the best overall game, and I don't think Rubina and Cam have a chance. That's just me.
Well, I think Rubina's got a chance, but Mackenzie's been challenge monster.
Yep, that's true.
If I'm Mackenzie, I can definitely prove my case in terms of that. And if I'm Rubina or Cam, I manage to get to the final two, I need to bring Chelsea with me. I cannot bring Mackenzie. If I bring Mackenzie, I lose. I may lose anyway, but I definitely cannot win against Mackenzie.
Indeed.
We'll see if we're right later.
Sunday, yeah.
Let's move on. Yeah.
No, I just have a quick, we'll talk about it more on the wrap up. Let us go to the workroom. This is the Reunited Nations, which means all the drag people who have been eliminated are back, because we're going to get a drag family makeover. The special guest is Raven, who was on the second season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. Second season of RuPaul's Drag Race and first season of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars.
And is also on WoW Presents Plus. It's also RuPaul's personal makeup artist as well.
I did not know that.
Okay, the mini challenge is, who is she? Queen Kong wins, and we have the makeover. She gets $2,500 in cash and assigns the makeover partners. Okay. And
I have the pairs.
Go for it.
Okay, so Queen Kong gets to work with Schwan and Muse. Vanity gets to work with Gallifaro. Alyssa Edwards gets to work with Ava LaQueen. Kitty St. Claus gets to work with Miranda LeBrow. Tessa Testicle gets to work with Athena Lekas. And Delania gets to work with Pythia.
And the partner becomes Ava Edwards, Puppy Scott Paws, Prinini Kong, Zirconia, Athena Breasticle, and Insanity Vane. So the maxi challenge, and the runway theme was drag family resemblance. The maxi challenge winner was Nehelenia, who won $10,000 from Facetune, and the bottom two were Kitty Scott Claus and Vanity Vane, and Vanity Vane went Vanity By.
Yeah, the song, the lip sync, a favorite around here, Believe by Cher.
You know, I'm going to say something, and this may not be a very popular opinion, but I really feel for a global drag race, these songs should be global.
I agree with you.
And when I mean that, I also mean not everything should be in English. You know, Menomina was classic, and it's a universal song. There needs to be more of that. You know, Kate Ryan, please. Hayaka Kiyoko, please. Right. You know, give us something more than just American. Yes, I get it. America is the main demographic, but you know what? Us Americans could use some culture as well.
Oh, dude, speaking of which, you did mention the guest. Did mention the guest judge from Drag Race Germany, Diane Brill.
Okay.
Yes. So, where is the German song? In 99 balloons.
Where's Heino and Antonio?
In German.
I agree with you on this. I agree with you on this. That's a little
I remember RuPaul, if you want to go back, RuPaul season 3, you had a lip sync with Mickey by Tony Basil in Spanish. Where's that in global? Force the American, I mean, Alyssa Edwards hasn't been to the bottom yet, but force the American to do some French, or Spanish, or Italian, or German,
I agree.
Whatever.
Yes. Okay.
Great.
I mean, if you're going to go to Muppets, let's do the Swedish Chef song.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
But,
anyway.
Johnny.
All right, so that leaves us with 5 queens left. The German queen, who is actually Swiss, the Italian queen, the Australian queen, the British queen, and the American queen.
By the way, you know that they're setting it up for Alyssa Edwards to win.
Oh, my God, Jason Blatt, get the hell out of my head.
We said this from the beginning, though.
I'm not sure about that one. I think there is a line between the people that should be in the top three and the other two, and it feels like even though she's at the bottom, Kitty Scott Claus, Queen Kong, and Alyssa Edwards will be in the final three. You're sort of feeling that's where the setup is. And I'm not sure if Alyssa Edwards is going to win. She's not getting as much of a winner's edit as Queen Kong or Kitty Scott Claus is. But it wouldn't shock me if Alyssa Edwards does win.
All right, I'll buy it. That's fair. That is fair. Okay, so what's that?
Because, again, she keeps getting in the top, but she hasn't won. That is a Pandora Box's edit, not a winner's edit. So if you want her to be winning the whole thing, she's got to win one or two more than the first episode.
I agree.
All right.
Just saying.
It was, you know what? It was make or break for Nellania, and Nellania slayed it. She absolutely slayed it.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, but I agree with you. If you want someone that's been consistently good in every single challenge, it is Alyssa Edwards. She has not had a bum note yet this season on Drag Race, even though she hasn't won. But again, she hasn't had a bad set either.
All right. So we built all the content out of this week at Drag Race, and I think we're all better off for it. So let's move on to... Oh, here's a button.
From the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Studios, this is Jeopardy!
And we got to talk about not one, but two tournament hopefuls. First one, yep. We go to Friday's show where Ryan Manton, again, disclaimer, friend of the site, friend of ours, is playing against Ann Singleton, an executive director from Wavestown, Massachusetts, and Mark Fitzpatrick, a content manager from Riverside, Connecticut. Going into the final, Ann's got 10,200. Ryan has 15,200. Mark has 23,400. It is about as big as a game as you could possibly get for Mark. As we go into Final Jeopardy category of literary characters. Here is the clue. A fragment from a nautical tool found on a Chilean island in 2005 was likely left by the Scot who partly inspired this character.
Oh, me, pick me. That has to be a hard one.
The representative from Brooklyn has the floor.
Who is Robinson Crusoe? That was easy. That one was an easy one.
That was an easy one, but neither Anne nor Ryan got it, amazingly enough. Gordon?
What was the scattered remains of Friday after he got eaten by the cannibals that Robinson Crusoe sold him out for?
Damn.
Okay. But Mark got it right. He wins 30,401, and believe it or not, he's still playing.
Right, as we get to tonight's show.
Yep, tonight he is facing off against Rob Frankie, a data analyst from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and Colin.
I like the analysis.
The analysis, yeah. And Colin Kelly, what is this? A girl between gigs from Melrose, Massachusetts.
Well, yeah, well.
That's great.
Excuse me. That's, you know what? That's a beautiful way of saying unemployed. But you know what? I like it. But it really doesn't matter because Mark has a lock game going into final. 23,600 to 6,200, 5,600. And the category of word origins with a clue that goes something like this. This word for one who cuts a trail comes from a name of a character in an 1840 novel. The representative from Fayetteville, North Carolina, state your business.
Medical science.
Okay.
Oh, you want the response? What is a Pathfinder? Also a reputable model of Nissan conveyance.
Oh, right. And no one got it. Okay. There is, according to Ken, who Mark said Pioneer, you're on the right track. There is a James Fenimore Cooper called the Pioneers, but the one called the Pathfinder about Natty Bumpo is the correct response. Pathfinder is the correct response. He bet nothing, and he's going for the top. Oh, what do you have?
Representative from North Jersey has the floor.
Who is Edward Flint Hands, because they didn't have scissors yet.
I like that. Flint Hands, indeed.
Edward Sharp Flint Hands.
Yes.
And he was also between gigs, so he had nothing better to do.
But he's going into tomorrow, going for his spot in the tourney come tomorrow. And by the way, we have a story about something that we're going to see next week on Jeopardy later on in the show.
Yes, but right now it's a show that's near and dear to Jason's heart. It is a show about cars.
Yes, it is. As Price is Right. As we recover, this is the third of the new Price is Right called Cars, 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 because every game is going to be played for a vehicle. The dice game was played for a 2024 Mercedes-Benz CLA 250. And unfortunately, painful loss, because in the first roll, second number, rolled a five and went lower. She got a one, and the exact number on the last end. Unfortunately, the second number was a six. Painful loss.
Painful. Second car was a Kia K5 GT line, and the game was cover up. And again, a painful loss because got it down to one number, and it was either an eight, a seven.
It was 28,691. 8417. She picked seven. Buzzer. It was a four.
Yeah.
And I like how we're using the Family Feud sound effects for the Price is Right recap, by the way.
Well, do you have you don't have the losing horns, do you? We'll do that one from now on, okay?
Okay.
Now this.
If you're a geek, if you're a game show geek, if you know, you know.
Yeah. You know.
But this prize, I drooled at this prize, okay? Not only, by the way, are the not only is Michael playing Spelling Bee for a 2024 Porsche Macan, but the bonus, you get to go and get the car in Germany, in Stuttgart, and then they will directly ship the car to your house. And Mercedes does that, and that's cool. 70,300. However, he only gets he gets five cars because we have a rare perfecto.
Yes, we do. We have a rare perfecto, and in this primetime playing, instead of each card being worth $1,000, each card is worth $3,000. So the first,
which is a little bit of a budget skimping, because the last time out, they gave out a $125,000 car, and each of those cars was worth $5,000.
Well, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
It was. See, Gordon remembers this stuff.
That was, by the way, an Aston Martin Vantage V8, and she got car on the first shot, if I remember
correctly. You do. However, you do. That's exactly what happened. Okay. Yay, game show geeks. Anyway, let's keep going.
So, first card, a C.
Bing.
Stops at 12,000. It goes into 12,000. It's a C. Goes on with 9,000. It's a C.
Uh-oh.
Okay. It's a C for the fourth one. And then he bails with 3,000 because, believe it or not, he picked all five Cs. Wow.
Good. From sea to shining sea.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, then we go to the second half of action with a Audi A340 TFSI in Lucky 7. It's a $40,000 car. She picks eight for the second number, it's a two.
Oof. And
this is going to end badly.
It's going to end very badly. It's not going to be pretty. And she loses the car. 22,456 losing horns. Yep. Not good. Then we go to, we're playing for a Ford Maverick pickup in vendo price. We have 9 gums, 6 lemonades, and 2 granolas. He picks the lemonade. Well, the gum was $2.49. 9 of them are $22.41. The 2 granola are $6.29 at $12.58. Looking good. The lemonade is $4.59, $27.54. We have our first win of the show. Finally.
Hey.
Okay. So we're now playing gas money for a Volkswagen Taos, okay? The 5 prices are $24,909, $27,520, $26,020, $219, $22,300, or $23,318. She picks $22,300. That's $1,000, Bill.
Bing.
She picks $23,318. That's $2,000. She picks $24,909, $4,000. And she leaves. What do you think it was?
$26,219.
Yeah, you read the recap. Correct.
Yeah. I am a prepared sum gun. So right. 6 cars, we give away a truck.
Right.
But we still have 1 more car in the showcase, but it's in the second showcase. The first showcase is a trip to Spain, a trip to Fiji, and a Baylighter Element E16. God, we're going to try and give away this boat if it kills us.
And by the way, the Barcelona is actually also, you get to see FC Barcelona's soccer game, too.
Nice. Okay, so top winner, Barbara passes. Michelle bids $47,210. Barbara gets 2 one-ounce bars of gold and a first deal home seat. A weight bench with weights and a power tower, a 55-inch 4K TV, and a Mini Cooper electric hardtop signature. She bids $37,500. Actual price, $44,256. The difference of $6,756.
That's a good bid. Decent bid.
Decent bid indeed. Actual price of Michelle's showcase, $48,989. She wins with a difference of $1,779. So she wins $51,174. That is Michelle Springer. Congratulations to you.
And actually not a very good show for giving away stuff.
Well, it's like the more expensive a car is, the harder it is to win. You think CBS wants to pay for all this? No.
No, but you know what we need to pay for, and that's a break. We're killing the toilet here, but we also have news and brain vision news. So, Chico, take us there.
All the news you didn't even know you need to know is on the other side of this break with Gordon Pepper and Jason Block. My name is Chico Alexander, 6851. You're home, where we love to interrupt. You give us 22 minutes.
And we will give you 22 different subliminal messages that Chenbot is going to be zinging us for.
Ooh.
Bald sexy.
Ooh.
Yes, morning.
Bald cuckoo clock.
Ooh, yes.
Snickers hole.
Subway Series 2024.
Give Grimace a ring.
Judge owns you.
Not in this series just yet. But we have a lot more
he's
to talk about.
He's saving it for the Mets.
Oh, let's hope so. We'll be back right after this. This is 5-1, and we love to interrupt. Let's go.
Seriously, give Grimace the ring.
Disaster victims need your help today. Throughout the United States, disasters are destroying homes and devastating lives. Disasters like the recent hurricane. You can help victims of disasters by supporting the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund. This fund enables the Red Cross to provide shelter, food, counseling, and other assistance to victims of disasters. To find out how you can help, call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
WLTI has been brought to you by Kentucky Fried Tar Heels. I was almost going to be Fire Me Please, but no, the Jets stole all the thunder. But still, Chico, what's going on?
Okay, we got Andy Dalton. He was okay. Chuba Hubbard, he did great. Dave Canales can't coach for beans. He's coaching. He's back.
And your college football team, sir. Did you lose to Duke?
We lost to Duke. We lost to Pitt. I think Mac. You know what? I say this with as much love in my heart because Mac Brown was technically a coworker while I was in Chapel Hill, and also because we are friends with his daughter. I think it's time to move on.
You lost to Duke.
Don't remind me.
That is Kentucky Fried Tar Heels. Ramsey's done right.
Well, I will let you do the business, and I have to just step away for a moment. But Gordon, give the cue.
Roll that beautiful green footage.
From the four corners of the globe to your frontal lobe, this is WLTI Brain Vision News with Chico Alexander, Gordon Pepper, and the award-winning Brain Vision News team.
Thank you very much, Doug Morris. As always, you can follow Doug Morris on all social media, Doug Morris Games at Rock 104 Rock Tracks and at Tracks Productions, and you can listen to Doug Morris every Sunday as he hosts Rock Tracks with Doug Morris on 104.5. That is Rock 104, WXR, Hattiesburg 104.5 on your FM dial, and all over the known
multiverse
on rock104fm.com. That's the live stream, and of course, using the Odyssey app and the Rock 104 app, available in your favorite app store. Right now, I need a bat with a lot of ink on it. Are you finding yourself missing Ink Master?
Yes, I want some Ink Master.
You really want some Ink Master?
Yeah, we do.
I do.
Because
we all do.
Good news for you. Because they have lined up October 23rd as season 16 opens on Ink Master on Paramount Plus.
Well, Dave Navarro needs a job, so.
No, it's Joel Madden.
He really needs a job then.
Dave Navarro is really severely in between gigs right now.
Yes. Indeed.
And returning as judges, we have DJ Tambi, three-time Ink Master champion, Ink Master champion Ryan Ashley, and one of the world's best color realism artists, Nico Hurtado. And in the new season, 16 artists will enter the shop. Only one will win $250,000.
Yeah, I'm really happy that it's coming back. I'm a big Ink Master fan. And I like the fact that, again, they're using Ink Master alumni to be judges on this. So
yes.
I'm really happy. Happy Pepper.
Aww. Yes.
And you know what also makes me happy? A date book. And so Thursday is Love is Blind Habibi. I'm assuming that's an Arabic version.
Yes.
Okay. Which is premiering on Netflix, and Roller Jam, which is premiering on Max. I think we're going to review that one, aren't we?
We're going to review that next week.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. Friday, we have Heather Ann Campbell and Chris Lee on Whose Line Is It Anyway? Sunday is the season finale of Big Brother, Monday is the season premiere of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune and the final episodes with Pat Sajak. And Wednesday next week is the Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity with Taylor Swift's boyfriend as host. And yes, I can say it that way.
Oh, of course. Because we all know that Jason Block is... He's not a Swiftie per se, but nope. He both respects and fears Taylor Swift.
She's a billionaireess, okay? 1.6 bill, not bad. But let's talk about Dad Apto, but I want you to play two clips. The normal one and the one I think you will understand why you want to clip. I hope you're right. That's the one. As of Monday, October 14th, which was after Pop Culture Jeopardy was taped, they kept the new screen, which is one screen instead of 30 small ones. Okay. Yeah. And it's now sort of...
It's like the screen they use for the UK and Australian versions, actually.
And also Wheel of Fortune 2 as well. Okay. But Gordon, it's going to look great, isn't it? Because I've seen pictures.
Everybody is more excited about it than I am. I think it's cool to do it in one stream with all that. I guess I'm looking at it as a tech head. I prefer 36. Maybe it's just me. But it's not terrible. It's not a bad idea. I mean, from a tech standpoint, it looks pretty neat.
I think it's going to look a lot cleaner on the screen, especially if you have your 4K sets, your 8K sets. I think it's going to look a lot cleaner.
We will see Monday. We'll see Monday. And that's very smart. This, not so much.
That's dumb.
So I'm not going to go into this. However, we all know what's going on with Sean Combs and all the lawsuits and all the nasty stuff that's going on, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not even going to go into what it is. But Piers Morgan did an interview on his show for Talk TV in the UK, Uncensored. And one of the people he interviewed, he was basically...
No. What happened was is that he interviewed, and this is from Entertainment Weekly, a singer named Jaguar Wright, okay? But when he discussed this, he alleged that Jay-Z, Sean Carter, and his wife Beyonce are also involved with some of the nefarious things that Diddy Combs, that Sean Combs did. Okay.
And if you're going to say something like that, you better have proof.
Right.
And Morgan
said on air, here's the media apology. Their lawyers contacted us to say that those claims were totally false and have no basis in fact. We've therefore complied with the legal request to cut them from the original interview. Editing interviews is not something we do lightly on a show called Uncensored, but like the proverbial cries of fire in a crowded theater, there are legal limits on us, too, and we apologize to Jay-Z and Beyonce. I bet the 900-pound hammer of God went down on Piers Morgan.
This is the sort of statement that you read that is carefully curated by a team of lawyers working behind the scenes because your ass needs to be covered.
Or a call came over to Piers and say, hello, Piers. You know all the money that you've been spending on litigation for slander throughout the years? Would you like to spend some more? No? Then there better be a retraction.
Yep.
That's just a hyper thought on my end. It's probably correct. It may not be, but we think it is.
And, well, I think Piers Morgan is going to drink some Haterade, too.
Haterade!
Now, in the lawsuit that never dies, which is the, the deal that never died, there is a potential class action lawsuit against the Paramount Pictures. Why? Because they didn't give Empire State Mandate, which is one of the companies involved in the merger, mandated notice for the 300 employees that were fired on September 24th, which, by the way, was part of Phase 2's Paramount's cut to get rid of 15% of its domestic workforce. Okay? The lawsuit said this, quote, on or about September 24, 2024, defendants, and thank you for deadline for this, Paramount Global CBS Interactive, Inc., terminated the employees of Julian Hagen's more than 300 employees who worked at and or reported to their headquarters in close geographic proximity to it. Defendants provided written notification of the termination, which was effective on or about September 30th. According to laws here in New York State, Gordon, Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act demands companies give staffers 90 days in case of a large layoff. And if the company does not give the employees 3 months, then the employer shall provide that employee with 60 days of calendar wages and benefits. Oops.
Yeah.
And it's going to get more ugly, too.
Unless in the off chance that it, well, works itself out in a huge settlement and Paramount wants to cut a really huge check.
Which they may or may not do.
Which they may or may not do.
So where are we sending, Piers Morgan and all those lawyers?
Como bella c'è la luna brilla strette strette come ho avuto bella pasticcia sotto cielo di Roma.
That was pretty good.
Oh, thank you. I was named after Dean Martin, you know. Anyway, that's just a story I like to tell. Anyway, Love is Blind, a favorite around here on Netflix, is going to Italy. Is the Netflix gave the green light to Love is Blind Italy, the latest version of the dating format. We all know that the U.S. version has run for 7 seasons. It is currently running now. The Arabic version will premiere tomorrow, as Jason alluded to. And the British version aired in August. Ben and Jay Italia will make the Italian version of the show. And right now, casting is beginning for the first season.
Ciao, Bella. And now we'll get some Italian media pros with that.
Pro Bella.
I got pros. In different area codes.
In this week's media pro report, we've got the cast for season 4 of Drag Race Down Under. Brenda Bressed, Freya Armani, Karna Ford, Lazy Susan, Lucina Innocence, Mandy Moon.
What? Mandy Moon?
Mandy Moobs.
Oh, Moobs. Ha! Okay.
Max Drag Queen, Nikita Iman, Olivia Dreams, and Vibe.
Okay.
I like Lazy Susan. That's clever.
Very.
It is. If you're a fan of Iron Chef, sad news to report, we lost the color commentator, Dr. Yukio Hattori.
As everyone would be called, Yuki-san? Yes, there you go.
And we'll always remember him saying through his dub actor, always a pleasure.
Right.
Don Francisco reacts to Marcelo Rodriguez's pastiche of him on SNL this week.
That was pretty good.
That really was. Sandy Tuxvig calls the Great British Bake Off the longest parts of my life. Ryan Seacrest and Kelly Ripa reunite on the set of Live this week.
That was awkward. Also, the Dwayne Johnson returns to the WWE at Bad Blood in Atlanta.
The Wheel of Dancing Dating Rumors stops this year at Gleb Savchenko and Brooks Nader, who have not been eliminated yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Maggie Sajak is channeling her inner Nicole Kidman for social media, where she posts sort of a parody of the AMC We Make Movies Better commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Zendaya calls Dancing with the Stars a very stressful experience. We did lose Fiona McDonald. And those are not the pros of the week. Yes, plural.
Go for it.
Because next week's season premiere of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, I don't know who's going to be playing, but I do know who's going to be playing this season. Guests include Rainn Wilson, Ellie Kemper, and Oscar Nunez for an office reunion. Josh Gad, Justin Long, and Rachel Harris for a New Girl reunion. Sam Richardson, Randall Park, and Matt Walsh for a Veep reunion. Tiffany Haddish and Regina Hall of Girls Trip. Joe Manganiello, Catherine McPhee, Andrew Rannells, Cameron Brink, and more. And it all kicks off this Monday, October 14th. It's going to be a really good season.
I think so.
We also have the return of Press Your Luck, if I'm not mistaken.
For season 7?
Yeah, sure too.
Well, part 2 of season 6.
All right, there you go.
Yeah. And those are your pros.
And that is Brain Vision. Jason, if you would, please.
Button right here.
Okay, that is the safe button. Now I have the not-so-safe button, which is under shielding until I take the shielding off and then hit it. But before we do that, we still have to review a whole glut of shows that we have not yet seen. That's coming up on the other side of this break here on We Love to Interrupt on 5&1. Stick around. We'll be right back. WLTI is presented by a vacant plot of land on the corner of Las Vegas Boulevard and Tropicana Boulevard. A lot of memories, a lot of magic, a lot of money, and now a lot of dust. We'll miss you, Tropicana. Godspeed.
Indeed.
There was a casino in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
They called it the Rising Trop.
Yeah.
Many a poor boy opened their wallets just to see other chips eavesdrop.
Did I mention I was going to Virginia over the weekend?
Are you planning a little profit session?
I'm planning a little profit session.
Is the building
open? What's in Virginia?
Right now it's a temporary casino in Danville, but right outside of it is going to be Caesars Virginia.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that official? Like official? Are they open?
Not yet. It's supposed to be open by the end of the year.
Okay.
But you know what?
So eventually Chico will get to Virginia, and when he's there, we may meet up with the super toilet.
Yes, and we do, because we have the final fall 2024 version of Push or Flush. You know the rules. Let's get to it. October 8th, Killer Cakes on Prime. Well, I think they're trying to capitalize on the Halloween slash Is It Cake phenomenon. And I'm kind
of
here for it.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. And you know what? It totally works.
Pastry, for me.
It's a push here.
Yeah, I'm a Halloween foodie guy. I'm going to be watching Push.
You know what? You know what? You know what? Fine. Let's get the fanfare up there. Let's
that
do
was
it.
Easy.
I think we may be going the other way with this one. October 9th.
House of Villains Season 2. How this got a Season 2, I have no idea. But,
flush for me.
It's a flush for me.
They got the two-part correct. Flush.
Here we go. One.
Two.
Three.
Plunge. By the way, I made it apple cinnamon. Because. I hope that's okay.
Okay.
All right. Next one.
Next one. Roller Jam on Max. It's America's Best Dance Crew if it were Starlight Express.
We've seen this before. I don't know if the peanut butter and motor oil phenomenon here. I'm going to jiggle this.
I, too, am going to jiggle.
It's an interesting concept. It's I'm going to pickle. I'm going to stay right in the middle. I'm going to be completely and utterly neutral on this. The execution is going to really depend on this. This for me, this falls into the it's so crazy, it may work category.
I agree with you on that. I totally agree.
And another thing that's so crazy that it just might work. Gastronauts on Dropout.
Now, what is Dropout?
It used to be College Humor.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's their it's the comedy streamer.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
It
so
used to be College Humor.
So, what is it supposed to be?
It's basically their answer to the reality cook-off competition.
So, we don't have any details on it?
I could get you some details right now, actually. It read sort of like Dormitory Iron Chef, but Gastronauts takes you to the final frontier of culinary chaos as host Jordan Myrick brings aboard three comedians
who
giving funny challenges to actual chefs. Who have to make something edible.
I'm not so sure about this one. Peggle.
Peggle is right.
It all depends on the execution.
I'm going to watch. It seems weird.
Okay.
And by the way, it's on dropout.tv, Jason.
Okay, Dropout TV. Next one, October 14th. The final version of Pat Sajak on Wheel as he hosts Celebrity of Wheel of Fortune Season 5.
Finger on the button.
I'm sorry?
Finger on the button.
Well, no, I just want to say one thing before we push the button.
Okay.
This is going to be melancholy. I wish they would have put in Ryan Seacrest to see what he can do, but he will be just as fine here. I can't push this hard enough. This is actually even better than the original game. Really.
I agree. And the fact that all the celebrities are just having fun and making it all about the game and less about each other, it's going to be a real big push here.
Yeah, I don't understand why the issue would be Seacrest. Sajak's perfect for something like this. Push.
Finger still on the button for what's next.
Don't be. Are you smarter than a celebrity? This is going to, I'm predicting this right here. This is going to be one of the biggest game show bombs of 2024. I don't trust Travis Kelce. I think the celebrities are going to really not do well on this. I have low hopes for this. Jiggle.
I actually am, you know what? I'm actually here for the train wreck. As long as it doesn't affect the game proper, I think it'll be fine. I'm gonna do a little bit up, a little bit more. I'm gonna give it a pickle.
I think pickle's the correct grade here. I think it will work just because it's celebrities. Part of that, however, is you need to get the correct celebrities. For something like this. Like Kelly Pickler on the show was absolute classic. If you go for people like that of that ilk, this will be just fine, Pickle.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, it's regular people with celebrities as the classmates.
Okay.
So
we'll see. We will see. Next one, October 18th, Shark Tank Season 16. See, I'm of two minds of this. I actually think this is the most American show on TV. I love the capitalist mentality of this, and I love the go-getterness of this. The problem is that with this, you get the, you know, you have the voice phenomenon where the coaches are more important than the products. Pastry, but should be a push.
I agree with Jason Block. And the thing of it is, this is going to be Mark Cuban's last season. And Mark Cuban is the voice of reason on this show. He's sort of like the angel on your shoulder, while Kevin O'Leary's the devil on your shoulder, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, it's a pastry.
A couple of notes here. Number one, for a purely American show, just a reminder that the original version of this show is called Dragon's Den, and it was not in America at all.
Actually,
I agree with you. I know I'm saying, but it is because...
If I may, the original show is called Money Tigers, and it aired in Japan.
That is correct. Yes, that came before Dragon's Den. I'm sorry, you're absolutely right on that. I take that back. Either way, this is not American. That all being said, this is business at its finest. It's negotiations at its finest. Mark Cuban is great. O'Leary is great. Everybody's great. The personalities are there. But I am going to disagree with Jay. Unlike The Voice, where I agree with you, there is way too much celebrity. The egos of celebrity is a major part of Shark Tank. So I disagree with you there. I think you need the celebrities and you need the egos and you need you rambling back and forth. But I agree with you on the grade, pastry. The Shark Tank is fun. And there's been a bunch of classic moments. And hey, if you're not careful, you'll learn something. Pastry.
I see what you did there. Next topic. Ink Master Season 16 on Paramount Plus. We talked about this. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see what happens. It's a pastry.
Yeah. Pastry for me.
Three pastries.
All right. Next topic. Okay.
I'm sorry. That would be...
I got it.
Go for it.
Buy it now on Prime Video. I have the premise here. It's like Shark Tank, except entrepreneurs get 90 seconds to pitch their product to an audience of potential customers, the 100. If the 100 like the product and the price, then the entrepreneurs go to a panel of Amazon executives and celebrity entrepreneurs. The panel selects which products join Amazon's exclusive Buy It Now store and award one entrepreneur $20,000 each episode.
It's sort of a speedier version of Shark Tank with a more immediate response. I'm kind of interested, Piggle.
I'm also kind of interested. I kind of reminds me of The Winner Is, if you remember that show.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm on a pastry this.
I remember this when it was called QVC.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Completely not interested in this at all. Flush.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, we're running the gamut here late in the frame. All right. Okay. Two more. Wishlist games. Just in time for the holidays, we have Nick Cannon and Lily Pons in a high-energy half-hour game show. Contestants play for the chance to win everything on their Amazon wish lists up to $25,000.
Well, it seems it's more of a Christmas thing. Okay.
I did say just in time for the holidays.
Yeah, I know.
This is gonna be one of the cheesy, cheese-like, Velveeta-ish substance that will be gracing your television, and you're there for the train wreck. At least I will be. Pickle.
Yeah, I'm gonna pickle too.
Make it three pickles.
A Quinn Martin production.
And finally. We don't know. Okay.
We don't know when this is going to launch, but we have assurances that it will launch. The new series of Tic-Tac-Doe.
I've always been a fan of Tic-Tac-Doe, even the bad versions. I'm going to be optimistic. Pastry.
I like the format.
Tic-Tac-Deal is my favorite show ever. No,
Back up, Gordon.
I'm not a fan of Tic-Tac-Doe. We all know this. My hopes are up, though, because this actually looks like a version that I may want to watch. Maybe? Piggle? I guess. I don't know. Maybe? It is... On paper, it looks like this is the version that I would like. We'll see. So, pickle.
Okay. I like Tic-Tac-Doe. I love Brooke Burns. I can't wait to see what the two together will look like. Pastry.
Okay. Everybody got their helmets on?
Got your helmets? Got your safety goggles?
Okay.
Kids, I must say, kids... Please do not try what we're about to do at home. We are professional morons.
Well, but I just have one question. Did you put the explosives on there?
Yes, I did.
Okay. In 5, 4, 3, 2, hit it.
Hitting it!
Oh, my... The drone show was excellent, though. I just have to admit.
Hey, we got a budget now.
Yeah, indeed. But we also, well, if you saw what happened to Tropicana Field tonight, oh boy, just saying.
This is, like we said, as we're recording, Milton has made landfall and the roof came off the place.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing they're going to have to replace the roof in the off season. Anyway, we've got a speed round coming up, and we're going to do that right after this. This is We Love to Interrupt on 5 and 1. Okay.
WLTI has been brought to you by That's My Roller Jam. It's roller derby. It's back and forth. And if you're penalized, you have to go to the penalty box and you stay there until you sing and identify songs from Jimmy Fallon's band, because they have nothing better to do because, like everybody else, they're in between gigs. That is, that's my roller jam, coming to a far-out network near you.
The girl between gigs may not have won Jeopardy tonight, but she is giving us a really good time.
She's won our little corner of the internet. And speaking of winning corners on the internet, it's time for a speed round, which starts now. Jay brought it up. I'll just rehash it. Big Brother, who's our winner?
Mackenzie.
Chelsea.
I'm going to say Mackenzie should win, but if they're smart, they're not going to let her get to the finals. But I don't think they're that smart, Mackenzie.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, I think if, what is it, seven jurors? Seven?
Yes.
4-3, 5-2?
5-2.
What do you think? I'm going to say Chelsea and Mackenzie both get there. And 5-2, Mackenzie.
Okay. Well, we will see next week. Wheel of Fortune.
Survivor
Who Leaves. I did not want... Rome better watch himself, though. I think Rome...
If he plays anything like Sue played, he is going to leave himself a giant out, and they're going to kick him out as a result of that.
Yeah, I think Rome can be in deep, big trouble.
Yep.
Okay, Wheel of Fortune. We had a $100,000 winner. Are we going to get the million? I mean, $1,000 loser. Not winner. Excuse me. Loser this week. Yeah, tonight, actually. Do we get a million? Will it happen? It's been 10 years now.
I think we're ready for one. I don't think we're going to get it just yet.
So, RuPaul's Drag Race. Who's going to be next out the door?
Natalania did what she needed to do in order to stick around. I don't think she has another one in her. I think she's going.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Chico on this one.
And Jeopardy still will... How long is our good friend going to be?
A couple more days. At most.
Okay. Do we have any mail?
We don't have any mail, but if you want to send us some, our address is WLTI@GameshowNewsNet.com. And of course, we are on all social media at Game Show Newsnet. I am at Dino R. Alexander.
I am at Beat the Block with the number 2 at the end.
And I'm at GSNN Haterade.
And of course, the network is at 5-1 net. That's 5-1 net, the number 5. ANDONENET. We talk about everything that's going on network wide, including what we talked about yesterday on the BS Big Show, which was Silly Saturday.
Yes.
7 upsets against top 25 teams and 1 goalpost that is currently in a river and being sold for scrap. And by scrap, I mean collector's items.
Yes, and of course, we talked about the firing of Robert Sala.
Moment of silence. Moment gone. Next!
So, what's going on with the UBA, sir? Gordon?
Well, by this point, everybody has had match number 1. Not everybody has had match number 2. So this week, we're going to be checking that out and our first top 50 of the season.
Okay.
All right. What's going on in
the NAWC? I'm so sorry. I will not be there this week due to atoning. And by the way, I believe our game next week will be atonement.
It will be.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. But we'll be talking about the Bad Blood heading to Crown Jewel, AEW Wrestle Dream, and the forwarding and the return of The Rock to see what's doing and where's it going. So Lots of wrestling news that Nikki Hayman and the gang will be talking about. It was a thing, Mr. Chico Alexander. I'm assuming a new show has dropped since we're already into Thursday as we record this.
You are assumed correctly, and it is another Revisited episode because Fast Channels are airing reruns of The Ropers. So we've taken this opportunity to revisit The Ropers, and we're questioning why it is on the list of 50 worst shows on television. Seriously,
okay.
No idea why.
It was a thing on TV.com. Over 100,000 subscribers, correct?
Correct, 107,000.
Close to 110 as we record this. So next week we will be reviewing Roller Jam. Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity? And we'll have a winner on Big Brother. And what else?
We're also going to be talking about Jeopardy. We're talking about Drag Race and more Survivor as we go deep into spooky season and also atone for our game show sins over the past year. That's all next week. Until then, for Jason Block, for Gordon Pepper, I'm Chico Alexander. Our time is up, and we thank you for yours. If you're in the path of the storm, please be safe. Please be careful. Please keep the Southeast United States in your thoughts and prayers this evening. Game over. And spread the love.
Good night.
Interrupt this program.